Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hello, Mark.
Good to see you once again.
Thank you.
Wearing your North Face jacket today.
Is it
a little bit chilly as we're recording?
Yes, that's right. A little rainy, a little dreary. But, you know, what do you expect
in
almost spring?
For a guy who spends a lot of time in Bally High and other places in Indonesia.
Yeah, it's a little bit warmer there.
Well, hey, we're continuing our discussion of being a trustee.
Yes.
And you started this, our last series, and I want to continue that, but a little bit of a review.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about what is a trustee and what are the responsibilities, because I create trust as a primary focus of my practice. So I think trust as a instrument. I've only got two instruments. I can utilize a will to help somebody, or I can use a trust. And the trust is the most common instrument that I use in my firm, which leads people to being trustees. So we start the whole process with the client being the trustee of their own trust. Now, the good news is when you have a revocable living trust and you are your own trustee, because they are your assets, your instructions, you're the trustee, all the assets are under your social security number. In other words, the revocable living trust gives you full power and authority, and it's really just a holding container for you. So therefore, because everything is still you, you can do pretty much what you want with any asset and in alignment of the trust. Now, that changes if you ever became disabled. So if one of my clients had a health issue, or if they pass away, then we may need a successor trustee, someone who comes after the original trust maker. And now a successor trustee, typically the child that you don't like the most, because who wants to do this job of being a successor trustee?
What about the spouse?
Well, okay, yeah, if you're married. No, we take the most responsible child, is what the most common language is, not the child you don't like. They may think you don't like them after that, but the successor trustee, yes, if you're married, then the immediate successor trustee is your spouse, because both of you hold the same container together. So again, full power and control to a spouse.
Right.
However, if you're single or both spouses are having problems, then a successor needs to come in. Now, this is really where we've been focusing, which is what's the responsibilities that we're handing off to someone, because they now have a fiduciary responsibility. Sounds like a really important thing. It is. And they have a fiduciary responsibility to follow the terms of the trust. So remember, if I create a trust, I don't have to follow my terms because, well, I have an amendment power. It's all my stuff. But if someone else comes in, so if my parents have a trust and I'm going to be their successor trustee, now I have a fiduciary duty to them to run the trust as they have designed it. So we have to look at this role. It's very important. It's very similar that if we used a will package, someone would need a financial power of attorney, and that's called an agent. And there are fiduciary responsibilities that come with being a financial power of attorney. Mm. Similarly, there are fiduciary duties of becoming a successor trustee. But in a trust scenario, there are more fiduciary responsibilities, and the law requests more from a successor trustee. Mm. Now, it's a little bit of the best of both worlds, to be honest, which is, first of all, there's more requirements.
Now, what do you mean by more requirements?
Yeah. Now, I'm comparing the requirements of a power of attorney agent compared to a trustee, a successor trustee of a trust. So we've talked about this in previous shows, but let's do a quick review, which is a financial power of attorney, which, by the way, you need to have if you have a trust as well. But in a will package, you're going to get a financial power of attorney and a healthcare power of attorney, end of life document. Okay, so now someone is having a health problem. We have the financial power of attorney, and there is a duty of care and loyalty. So you're supposed to do what is in the principal's best interest. Okay, so what is in their best interest with their money? And also, you're not supposed to steal the money. So that's a good thing, right? So you're not supposed to steal. Those exist likewise in a successor trustee scenario, but there's other requirements. We're going to get into a couple of those with this show, specifically with investing, following the terms of the trust, and there's also a viewpoint towards the beneficiaries that does not exist with a financial power of attorney. So with this, I had a client and I was going through some of the, this is what a trustee does, and their eyes just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's like, oh my gosh, what did I just get saddled with? What did I sign up for? And it is a pretty hefty responsibility. So I thought, well, let's spend a couple shows in talking about a successor trustee. And again, this really comes from the foundation that I utilize revocable living trust as the primary instrument in my firm's practice. Mm. So therefore, we need to understand what does it mean to hand this off to the next person, usually a child, but it could be a sibling, it could be a good friend, it could be multiple other people, and just wanted to have a quick review of what this means.
Yeah, and one thing I've learned from doing these shows with you over the years is how much a successor trustee or trustee has to do sometimes while the folks are still alive.
Oh, yeah.
So I always thought of trusts and wills as this is all when people have passed away, but so much, maybe years, that
Absolutely.
You could have responsibility while your folks are still there.
Yeah. So as people age, they may have health incidences. They may begin having memory issues. I've had a couple clients that have had long-standing memory issues. So someone needs to come in and stand next to them for a much longer period of time. And so the average time of disability, in other words, the average time that you may need help – ends up around just over 2 years. So just a little over 2 years. But now think about that. That's 2 years on average of someone else managing your life for you. Mm. And so is that person ready? Do they understand what their responsibilities are going to be? Whether it's a will package and they have to operate out of the financial power of attorney and the healthcare power of attorney, or whether it's a revocable living trust and they got to step in and be a successor trustee and operate out of the financial power of attorney and healthcare power of attorney. So, that's a decent period of time, and it can be much longer than that as well.
Yeah.
So there is a different flavor when you have to assist somebody during their lifetime because it involves paying multiple bills. Now, today, things are a little bit easier, actually, because as soon as someone has access to another person's bank account, so we're going to talk about a trust scenario because we're talking about successor trustees. So someone has a health incident, they're no longer able to manage their own financial affairs. What does that look like? Well, typically, it's going to be a phone call to my firm for one of my clients, and we need to then create some legal documentation of what has happened, and we need to exchange, in other words, get the successor trustee legally empowered. We have to show that they are now the trustee of this instrument that we created. Mm. It'd be similar in a financial power of attorney, though, which is there is either a financial power of attorney that says this is automatically or immediately turned on, or there's one that is called a springing power of attorney, which is if it springs into action upon a certain event, you have to demonstrate that the event took place. So, for example, very, very common language, specifically in the marketplace, not as much for me, but A very common thought process is if two doctors have examined me, sometimes one doctor, if a doctor has examined me and they've determined that I'm unable to manage my financial affairs, okay, and that's actually a quote, that then I am deemed to be incompetent. And so that would be a springing power of attorney. It springs into action after a doctor or two doctors examine the person and make this determination. So then, if that's true, that agent's going to have to carry around a doctor note and do other things to demonstrate that they are actually legally able to use that document. Now, in a successor trustee, we use what's called a certification of trust. It's an affidavit by the current trustee that says, I'm the one in charge. And Washington law allows for the certification of trust to hold its weight because it's a legal affidavit. It's legally certifying that I'm in charge and you don't have to look beyond this statement. So we don't have to have the whole doctor notice and everything else. So in some ways, the transition can be much easier in a revocable living trust for the person who's going to take up the power in the successor trustee. So we have to have this event take place. The successor trustee needs to be put in place. We have to create a new documentation, a new affidavit that demonstrates this, and then we have to get that to the proper financial institutions. Oftentimes, the successor trustee doesn't even know what financial institutions that their parents, let's just say that they're going to be caring for their parents in this story. They don't even know where their parents' assets are. Oh, well, my parents' bank at ABC Bank, that much I know, but I don't know where they keep their investments, where they keep their IRAs. And so there could be a long curve of even finding the right information, let alone the time and the training it's going to take to get up to speed. So that's one of the things that I think is very, very different about my firm. Number one, we keep in contact with our clients, so we have consistent updating where we know where our clients' assets are. So if something happens, we can actually be the one who steps in and says, these are all the assets. Here is where everything is at. And all of a sudden, there's no searching and finding anymore. And we run educational opportunities for successor trustees in our program. So not only do we know where the assets are, but now we're training the next successor trustee. So if this comes to their hands, they're not blind. They're not guessing. They're not having a huge curve. So they already are usually in an emotional, difficult situation. I have a parent. They're having health incidences that will typically trigger pretty deep emotions in most people. Then on top of that, we're going to throw in, oh, by the way, you're the one responsible for all the financial upkeep of that parent as well. Oftentimes, it's the same person who's doing the finances as the medical. So now we've got all these different duties. And oh, by the way, I know you have your own life. You probably have your own kids. You probably have your own spouse. You probably have your own financial difficulties and things to manage. So on top of your typical life, we're going to throw all this on top of you as well. So wouldn't it be amazing if there was a way, a system that could help the successor trustee expedite their crossover, expedite their understanding, know where everything is at, and be prepared for this incident instead of saying, I'm going to have you manage everything of mine and you still have to have your own life. Still, be sure you get home and cook your kids dinner after being with me all day in the hospital and, oh, by the way, paying my bills and managing all my finances. So yes, this request of putting somebody into this position, whether it's a financial power of attorney agent or whether it's a successor trustee, it is a big ask, and you got to make sure you have the right person. So wouldn't it be amazing if there's an opportunity to have that person trained, know where the assets are? Well, there is an opportunity, and I'm not so sure that there's many other firms in the Pacific Northwest that actually give that opportunity to make this transition and help the successor trustee like my firm does. And so successor trustees, really important conversation.
Being a trustee, the subject this week, as we're talking with Paul Grant, and you want to find out more about his services, how do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Well, head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, and it's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show, and I want to personally invite you to an upcoming educational workshop happening on Tuesday, May 6th, starting at 6 p.m. This will cover the basics of estate planning. What's the difference between a will and a trust? What do power of attorneys do? And much, much more. Would love to meet you. We're going to be doing this by Zoom, or you can come to the office and meet me in person. And it all happens on Tuesday, May 6th at 6 p.m. You can head to legacyandfaith.com and there's sign-up instructions and opportunities found there. So head over to legacyandfaith.com and sign up for our Tuesday, May 6th, 6 p.m. educational workshop. See you there.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, looking at being a trustee this week on the show. And we've had a few shows in this series, and you can get those at legacyandfaith.com. But continuing, who knew all these responsibilities?
Oh, yeah, and again, good times, isn't it?
And again, so it's so different about your firm is you really stress an ongoing relationship with people who work with you, so you know where everything is. You're kind of almost like I wouldn't say a co-trustee, but you're very involved in what's going on with that person so that the trustee can really be informed.
Yeah, look, estate planning is supposed to be about getting good information, good instructions to the person so that there is as smooth a transition as possible, whether it is about disability because you have a health incident in your life or whether you pass away. It is one of the highest values of almost every one of my client, which is I don't want to leave a mess. Mm. I want to make sure that it is as smooth and easy for the people that I'm going to entrust with this thing. Well, how do you get smooth and easy if you don't know where anything is at and you've never been trained? Mm. I don't believe it's possible, actually. Mm. And the traditional system is set up that here's your document. The attorney will shake your hand and say, let me know if you need anything. And it just doesn't work. Mm. Documents get stale. The law gets stale within those documents. Things change. Your assets change. And so how do we bridge the gap between I'm living life and I get the phone call. Now what am I supposed to do versus I'm living life. I get the phone call, but I've already been trained and I know who to contact and I know that this is going to be okay. Mm. But those are different worlds.
Yeah.
So, but as we look at it, there's a couple things I want to bring to everyone's attention of what a successor trustee is supposed to be doing. Now, I mentioned these briefly in our last show, but I'm going to hit them again quickly, which is there's three primary roles. So the three roles of a successor trustee is that they need to administrate the trust, they need to invest assets, and they need to distribute finances to the beneficiaries. So, administrate. That simply means that you are keeping track of all the expenses, all the income, and you can keep receipts. You know where to find your statements. Now, for someone who's not well organized, that is already blowing them out of the water, right? Mm-hmm. So there's different personalities of who should be a successor trustee. Are they well organized? Can they keep track of their own finances? And so do they know where the receipts are? Can they keep receipts? Can they open up an Excel spreadsheet and keep track of these things, or are they just going to be flying by the seat of their pants and that's how they manage their own funds? That may not be the right person to be a successor trustee. Mm. Even if you trust that they're not going to steal from you, that's great. But that's not the only bar. Mm. We have to look at, are they well organized? Can they keep all the administrative tasks in order? Are they going to remember to file taxes? And will they have the right relationships? So administration is, again, keeping all of the income and expenses straight, being able to give that to the beneficiaries, knowing where to find your statements of assets, and then making sure the taxes are paid.
So it may not be a child then. What happens if none of your kids have those kinds of gifts?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they say, Mom, Dad, this isn't our wheelhouse. We don't want to do this.
Yeah. Or what if your kids are in their 20s? This is not the responsibility you want to throw on a 20-year-old in college. I don't care how responsible you think they are. They are not ready for a responsibility like this. Yes, or what if you don't have kids and you don't have a deep tribe of siblings or other people? Or as we get older, our siblings get older with us. And so then what do you do? There's opportunities. There are companies. There are law firms that would then step in and assist.
Hire a trustee?
Yeah, but the negative is that you have to pay that person. But right. The positive is that this is what they do.
Right.
And so yes, there are professional trustees. There are individuals and companies that do this all the time. And so you need to be able to find that right person and or company.
Do you guys do this at your company?
Yes, we actually have quite a few trusteeships that we manage.
All right.
There's also then we look into friend groups and into whether it's nieces or nephews. In other words, who in your circle is qualified to do it, even if it's not one of your children. Mm. So do you have a sibling who is 5-10 years younger than you that you think, okay, they're in good health and they would be able to do it?
I would think this is more and more common because so many people have not had children these days.
Yeah, more common. You're right.
They need to hire somebody to do this.
Yes. Yeah, they do. Or they got to reach into their sibling group or deeper into their benches. Mm. So you need to be able to have the right personality, administrate and track all this stuff. They need to be ready for those duties. Now, the other part is investing, which is they need to have the ability to understand what you are currently invested in, how to maintain those investments, what is your investment philosophy. So if you're highly into rental properties, so let's say that you have multiple homes and you rent them out, and you're selecting a trustee who has never had a rental unit in their life, how are they going to manage that asset? So it's not just about, they keep good track of their stuff. Now we got to go to the second test because they have a duty to invest, which, by the way, does not exist in a financial power of attorney. So this is why a trust can be a more powerful, protective instrument for the client themselves, which is the trustee is now responsible for ensuring that the investments are being managed appropriately well. Now, they don't have to be a financial advisor and everything else, but
stockbroker.
That's not the bar of investment. Mm. So it's called a prudent, reasonable person. So what is the average individual doing with their skill set? That's what you're supposed to be doing as far as managing. But if you have rentals, if you own a business. Mm. Boy, you have to choose the right person in order to get the right result. And so, again, it's not just about tracing and administrative skill. It's also about the ability to manage. Now, many people have a 401k. They have an investment portfolio, and then they have their primary property. Okay, that's pretty streamlined. And many people even have a financial advisor that they already work with. So we have someone that we can go to say, how are they invested? What has been their philosophy? Help me maintain that for them. Boy, you're going to be operating in your fiduciary duty really easily if that is the case. But that's not the case that everyone has. So the more complicated your assets get and the more complicated your holdings are, the more sophisticated your trustee needs to be. and because they have this duty. Now, the last one is to, that they must have the duty of the role of distribution. And so that means they have to make appropriate payments and distribute to other people. Does your trust allow for the trustee, the successor trustee, because in the story you're no longer able to manage your money, does it allow for that person to care for your kids? Well, if you have minors, then the answer is yes. But what if they're over the age of 18? Has the trust even considered that there's this gap in most people's lives when they're still financially reliant upon their parents? What if you have a special needs child? What if your child is living at home and they're in their 20s or in transition? What if you have a struggling child and you're helping them out on a monthly basis? Are any of those instructions inside the trust? Because if they're not, then the trustee, by the terms of the trust, may be bound to only use the money for you and you alone. Now, all of a sudden, we've cut off a necessary financial assistance to the family, and that's usually not people's intent. So the trust has to be well designed, but notice how the successor trustee must follow the terms of the trust by the letter of the law. They cannot be moved by their emotion. Mm. They cannot be moved by tears and crying and whining or anger. They have to follow what the trust says. This is a really big responsibility, specifically if you're going to be dealing with family and with siblings and everyone else. So we got to have the right person administrate. They got to understand the assets and be able to manage that. And then they've got to be able to understand the terms of the trust to make the appropriate distributions.
All the responsibilities of being a trustee. We'll continue this discussion next time. If you like the way Paul approaches this subject with trusts and you want to find out more about his services, how do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Well, head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. You can find past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, and ways to communicate with us, and it's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
The Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.